Have you ever experienced a nagging feeling that there's something that you meant to say and never got a chance to say it to somebody? Today, we're going to be talking about unfinished business and the effect that it can have on your relationships and your life. Find out more ways to improve your relationships at therelationshipmaze.com. We hope you enjoy this podcast. Please share and subscribe. Welcome to this episode of Mind, Body and Relationship Maze. And today we're going to be talking about something really important, which is unfinished communication, or sometimes in Gestalt terms, what we might call unfinished business.
Yeah, so it's this idea that there's something that you're sitting on, a bad feeling, some thoughts, some sense of, I wish I'd said this, I wish I'd, you know, communicated this to someone else, and it's something is left hanging that hasn't been completed.
Yeah, and often a good example of this is when, for example, we've really wanted to say something to maybe a relation, maybe a parent, for years and years, and we never say it. And as with an example from my own life, when my mother died, there were some things I really wanted to ask her to say, and I kept putting it off because I was worried, or I was worried she might be angry, or I was concerned about the response. And unfortunately, when she died, I was never able to have that communication. And this is one of these things where we're left with that feeling of something that's unfinished.
Yeah, and that's something that you probably experience quite frequently in your life as well. So it might be related to friendships where you feel like, oh, I wish I'd said this to my friend, either something positive or negative that, you know, that should have found some expression, or something you wish you'd said to your partner and you didn't quite do it. So as I said at the beginning, it leaves this sense of almost like a physical sense of uncomfortableness I'm struggling to find the right word here, some sort of discomfort, yeah, that you're left with.
Yeah, and actually, when you were saying that you're struggling to find the right words for it, it's that sort of thing that sometimes, you know, when we don't find the word for something, that's another example of it, where we have that tip of a tongue experience, which is a more minor example, but some you can't let go of that feeling that something, you know there's something that hasn't been finished, but you all can't quite think of what it is.
Yeah, it just bugs you, right?
Yeah, it kind of bugs you, but sometimes it bugs us out of our conscious awareness. So so some of these things, as children, for example, if a parents said something to us, or they didn't express their love to us in a way that we kind of could receive that love in a way that, you know, let us know that we felt loved, even if our parents were trying to do that, we didn't recognize that. Years later, it can affect us out of our conscious awareness, but it drives our behaviors and how we kind of interact in our relationships, how we feel, how we kind of what we look for in relationships.
Yeah, because the unfinished business might be that we always wanted our parents to tell us, well done, that was really good, and we never quite heard it from our parents. So the unfinished business might drive us then into the arms of a partner who we hope will tell us what we want to hear, or who will give us the kind of attention or love that we might not have quite got in the way that we wanted it when we were younger. So it happens kind of on this macro level as well as sort of on micro levels in terms of interactions that happen in your relationships as well. So it might be something, a sort of feeling of something that you're looking for, something that needs sorting out, this unfinished business around love, for example.
Yeah, actually, one example of this, and I don't know with your own experience angle, is I've come across quite a lot of people who spend their lives really dedicated to helping other people, but never seem to get back. But actually, when you talk to them, what they really want is they really want love. They want people to do things for them. And frequently, like in childhood, maybe they didn't get given that sense of love. And so by really giving out, by kind of giving out all their energy and never really looking after themselves, which is really important, they're hoping they're going to get this back.
Absolutely. I mean, there's sort of like, if we look at imago therapy, that's one way of working with couples, one theory that informs couples therapy. So that's the basic principle, that every relationship to some extent is always driven by unfinished business, that we choose our partners on the basis of unfinished business, that we are trying to get something from our partners that we didn't quite get earlier on. And it might be just little things, but it might be sort of bigger things around, you know, sort of wanting to be praised more, wanting to be told that we're great, something like that. So the basic underlying theory in imago therapy is that we are always unconsciously looking for a partner who heals all the wounds that we have from our childhood. Whether you believe in that or not is another question. I think it's got a lot to offer, this theory, and I frequently witness it when working with couples.
Yeah, absolutely. And in Gestalt therapy terms, or we talk about the Gestalt, where we have a whole cycle. So the Gestalt essentially is like the whole. And basically, when we go through situations in life or communications, everything that we're kind of experiencing in life, we need to complete the cycle. Mm. And if that is incomplete, it's what's often termed unfinished business, where there's a sense that something isn't finished.
Yeah, so on a very basic level, to give you an example of a Gestalt or of a cycle, in Gestalt we also talk about cycles that we have to complete. So for example, I'm hungry, I notice my stomach is rumbling, as it does frequently. I notice that I'm getting, you know, I'm lagging in energy, etc. I get mobilized, I get up from my sofa, I go to the kitchen, I make myself a sandwich, I sit down, I eat my sandwich, and that is a completed Gestalt.
Yeah, and the completion is fully when you've eaten it, and there's that almost that sense of satisfaction, and then you can move on to the next one. So yeah, so we complete through those, and unless you have that feeling that whole cycle has reached that level of some sort of satisfaction, that it is finished, we're left at some level that there is something that isn't complete.
Yeah.
And again, some things in life are relatively minor. I mean, you know, there are things that happen every day that may seem a little unfinished, like maybe we didn't get a chance to say thank you to someone when we're out at shops, and those might be quite minor, and they're not really going to kind of affect us particularly. And we can kind of run through that completion in our own minds sometimes. We can kind of imagine a conclusion to that, and that's okay. But there are other situations in life where when we don't finish these cycles, and there's that awareness at some level, even unconsciously, that it's unfinished, that it can cause certain issues, either later in the day or later in our life, even years later.
And in a relationship, a sort of classic unfinished cycle would be that, you know, my partner says something to me like, well, they might be a little bit short, or they might be a little bit wound up about something. They say something like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. And I get really offended by that. I kind of start to worry about it. I didn't like it when my partner said this, but I don't raise it. So that then it's sort of, I sit on it. I sleep on it. I sit on it. It sort of gnaws away, and it's this sense of something hasn't been completed here. What hasn't been completed is me saying to my partner, I didn't like that.
Yeah, and another example of that, which is kind of a combination of different people I've come across, is for example, a group of friends, and one, they're very close, and then maybe someone else comes into that group, and one person sees that this person who they thought was a really close friend of theirs seems to be spending more time with that other friend, and in their mind they're thinking, you know, this person's rejecting me, this person's acting differently, and they start closing off, they start blocking themselves from that relationship, because in their mind they're thinking one thing about what they think their friend's thinking, but it isn't what the friend's thinking, but they don't communicate that. So they go away thinking a certain thing, which affects their behavior. And as a result, their behavior influences their friend and makes their friend probably shut off even more, because their friend thinks this person's being cold to them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a lot in the area of fantasies here, isn't there? It's this sort of idea that we create these ideas, these imaginative dialogues in our head about what the other person might say, what they think, etc. So it's just imagined ideas. It's not necessarily real. And the only way to find out whether this is really what's going on here, this is really what they're thinking or feeling about me, is to address it, right? To complete the cycle, to complete the Gestalt.
Yeah, I'm picking up that. I think that's really important, is that bit about fantasies.
Yeah.
Is that the reason we often don't communicate is because of the anxiety we feel, or the other feelings which kind of hold us back, because what we imagine the other person is thinking a certain thing or going to respond in a certain way, which in my experience, 9 times out of 10, they don't.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, many people I've worked with have put off communications with parents, with loved ones, with other family members for years and years. And as we work together, when they have those conversations, it's like suddenly within almost a day, that relationship, which had kind of almost been separated for such a long time, just comes together because both people wanted to have that conversation, but neither felt they could because of what they were imagining would happen.
Yeah, and that's just so common. I mean, that's something that you're probably familiar with as well. Lots of people struggle with this idea of conflict. Yeah, they think that if they express a so-called negative feeling, if they say that they are upset, frustrated, or that they struggled with something that somebody else has said, they think that the other person might not like it, might reject them, might say, well, you're not going to be my friend, you're not going to be my partner anymore. So there is an underlying fear of loss very often. And it's so common. Lots of people struggle with this. I think most people I work with as well say that they really find it very difficult to raise anything that they experience as conflictual. So conflict gets avoided. There's always this anxiety of saying the wrong thing or being received in the wrong way.
Yeah, and one of the other manifestations of that is not just in terms of the anxiety you experience yourself from not communicating, but sometimes it's easier to end up blaming the other person.
Well, yeah.
Thinking like, they should know that when they didn't look at me when I was speaking to them, that that was, you know, that I'd find that hurtful, or they should know that doing X is going to make me feel Y, so why should I bring it up with them?
That's very true. I mean, there's a lot of this kind of blame game, isn't there? Absolutely, that goes on. But yeah, so it's often about, it's kind of that this idea of mind reading, my partner should know, particularly in relationships, my partner should know what I feel and think, they should always get it right. But often, as I say, it's this real fear of, I might say the wrong thing and they might not like me anymore. And this fear that there's a lot at stake here, that, you know, that there's love at stake. If I say the wrong thing, if I challenge you on something, you might not love me anymore. So things get unsaid. And at the worst end, I think some of you might have experienced that as well. You get into this sulking business, of endless, a day passes where you sit there, arms crossed, and you sort of wait for your partner to raise it and say sorry or something like that. That plays out very frequently as well. But really, does it resolve anything? No, it doesn't. It just makes it worse. It just escalates the situation, and it doesn't resolve any conflict.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you know what Lila stands for, then this podcast is definitely for you. Two besties since middle school turned moms and psychologists chat the good, the fun, and the yucks of life.
We're tackling all things mental health, from our own personal self-esteem to losses like friendships and parents, as well as addiction. Many things as midlife mamas are going through, from our own personal experiences with our added professional flair.
We hope each week our listeners feel like they just left a good old therapy session with their bestie. We'll dish tips and tricks to help keep your mental wellness in check and hopefully make you giggle a time or two.
Be sure to check us out each Monday and meet your life's newest cheerleaders, Sarah and Jen, with the Lila's Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings us probably into, well, how can we communicate things in a way that can help avoid these things happening, so that we don't have to spend days kind of crossing our arms and sulking and not communicating to our partner or communicating to our friends or whoever it might be. And like I said, it can go on for years. I mean, I've really seen this for 10, 20 years where a conversation's been avoided, and when it's done in the right way, it can really transform everything. And I think it's so important as well to have those communications with people like parents or grandparents, where, you know, we may not be able to have those conversations if we don't do that fairly soon. It's too easy to put it off, and then what happens is we'll just keep thinking about it all the time for the rest of our lives. So it's having those conversations and being able to do something. So in terms of, you know, how do we have those difficult communications? What is a way that we can actually communicate to somebody that we're not happy about something?
So a really good, sorry, I keep losing my voice. So a really good entry point is always to start off by saying, I feel. So you start with your own sensations, with your own experience. You start with your own position, how you experience this situation, how you experience the comments that your partner made the day before, for example. So you might say something like, well, I felt a bit anxious when you said this to me. I was worried that you don't like me anymore, or I felt that you were telling me that I wasn't doing this very well. So it's kind of just expressing your own feelings rather than putting this sort of pointy finger over there, is starting here first. Then it's less confrontational when you start with yourself. Yeah,
absolutely. And also I think when you're saying, I feel when you do X, that it makes me, whatever it happens to be, I feel that when you do X, so we're saying something specific rather than general. So we're saying a specific behavior rather than kind of labeling them. So I might say, I feel upset. I want to avoid labeling, so I'm not going to say I feel upset when you act like an uncaring, selfish, good-for-nothing. So it's more, I feel upset when you don't kind of help me clear up after a meal, for example.
Yeah.
And what I prefer is if you could, help me clear up at the end of the meal, and that would just help me know that that you care about me or whatever it might be. That's just one simple example.
And I think a really important distinction here is also that you then take responsibility for your own feelings. Because what is really not very helpful is when you tell another person that they make you feel in a particular way. They don't make you feel in a particular way. You respond in the way that you respond. You are responsible for your own feelings. You can transform your own feelings as well. It's not necessarily your friends, your partners, your colleagues' responsibility to do that. But they need to hear that they've impacted on you. That's important. But you're starting from your position rather than from the other person's position. That's the difference. So you're taking up a slightly more adult role here, a role of responsibility, and then your partner can step in, or whoever you want to talk to, and can come from that position as well. So they don't feel quite so attacked. If you kind of say, you are making me angry, then you're putting the blame over there onto your partner. You're saying your partner is responsible for your anger. And that might be partly true, but but you are the one who's getting angry. Yeah, it's sitting with you, not your partner.
Yeah, I think that's a really important concept that's quite difficult sometimes to take on board.
Yeah.
So it's something like love, like, I can't give somebody love. Like if I said, okay, here's a box of love for you, Angela. It's like, we can give a present, but we can't give love. I can do things that I hope will help the other person feel loved. But when you think about an emotion like love, where does that come from? Well, ultimately, it comes from within you. So, things that someone else does may have an impact on that. It may influence that. But it's very different for different people. Ultimately, that feeling comes from within us, and we can do what we can to help our partner feel loved, but we need to know as well what it is about them and their kind of past experience that allows them to feel that way. One question that's quite challenging as well is that when somebody says something like, you make me so angry, a really challenging question, but really helps kind of think about where the emotions come from, is what is it about what this person does that causes you to choose to feel angry?
Absolutely, because it's a choice on some level, conscious or unconsciously. You're choosing to take on that emotion.
Yeah, but that can be quite a challenging kind of a question. So it's certainly not something to say to your partner. Like if they say, you make me so angry, I certainly wouldn't say, well, what is it about what I do that causes you to choose to feel angry?
Absolutely.
Not likely to have the best response.
No, it's quite difficult, isn't it? Yeah. Or a question that I often also explore with couples is that I ask them, so what do you do that is unhelpful in this situation? So how do you contribute to it? It's about, ultimately, it's about taking some responsibility as well in this situation. Remember, if you are having a conversation with someone else, if there's dialogue, it's always two people are involved in this dialogue.
Yeah, and I think above all, avoid blame, because we don't always know the reason for the other person's behaviour. We interpret it.
Yeah.
So if they don't do something, we hope they do, because in our past experience, for example, like taking trash out, or the rubbish out in the UK, it's called, that might be a sign that our partner loves us. But in other situations, in other people's experience, that doesn't mean anything at all. It's so basically we interpret things very differently based on our past experience. So avoid blame. And what's really great is before having that discussion, imagine you could step into the shoes of your partner. So imagine what it would be like to be them. Why might they be thinking the way they're thinking? What might be their positive intention, what might be going on for them. You know, maybe they just didn't notice. Maybe, you know, in their past they've had very different experiences from you. Yeah. But imagine you could, an expression is like walk a mile in their moccasins. That's one of the old expressions. So imagine you could step into their shoes and think, you know, okay, hang on, rather me interpret the situation, let's think, what would it be like to be them?
Yeah, maybe they just had a very stressful day yesterday and kind of had a bit of anger pent up, and you were in the firing line. That doesn't make it okay necessarily, but it might create a little bit more empathy, a bit more understanding for where this, the intensity of your feeling might come from. So yeah, so generally speaking, and I know again this is sort of really easily said and not so easily done, it's kind of trying to also have, ascribing some noble intention to your partner. The idea that your partner they're not there to get you, they're not there to hurt you necessarily, they're there, you know, they are on your side. If you come at it from that perspective, it creates and shifts the situation very frequently. And sometimes that's hard, as I say, because you feel hurt, you want to hit back. But if you create just a little bit more empathy or a little bit more understanding of why something was being said in the way that it was being said, it completely can change perspective, as you say, because it's all about interpretation in the end, isn't it?
Yeah. And in terms of having these difficult conversations, what can be really useful on a practical side is to think about having them at an appropriate time and appropriate place. So, you know, if your partner's really busy, if they've had a very challenging day at work, if they are very stressed, they may not be in that place to listen to you. So bringing these things up may not be the best time. It may not get the ability to have that communication that's going to be successful in the way that you want it to be. So make sure you have the right time where you both can have time to talk.
Absolutely. And then also when you do have that conversation finally, it really helps just to focus on the one issue, the one item or the one sentence, the one emotion or whatever it is, one thing that you want to focus on with your partner in this conversation. So, you know, to one statement that was made, for example, the previous day that was so upsetting, that wasn't completed, where the cycle wasn't completed. Rather than dragging up a whole host of other unfinished businesses that you're still sitting on, so that there isn't this kind of eruption, because that is something that frequently happens with couples as well, that there's a lot of unexpressed feelings, unexpressed frustrations that one or two partners are sitting on. And when they finally get around to having this conversation, it's a whole bag of stuff that gets dragged up, all sorts of complaints that one or both partners have about each other. So don't do that. Just focus on one thing, and if there's something else that needs addressing, then you do that another time.
Yeah, absolutely. And also focus on the purpose behind your wanting to have this communication, because the reason that we want to have this communication very frequently, maybe not always, but very frequently, is we want to have a better relationship with this person. Right. And actually, what's stopping us from having this better relationship is not having this communication. Mm-hmm. But in our mind, we sometimes worry that having a communication will make things worse. Mm-hmm. Whereas that's just our imagination. It's our fantasy, like I said. And finding the right way to say this, taking responsibility, and above all, focus on really the possibility of improving the relationship. Mm-hmm. So thinking about the positive intention behind having this communication can really help the communication to go more smoothly. Focus on, you know, how you'd like this communication to go with you and the other person.
Yeah, and you might prepare for that as well in that sense, yeah, to kind of just imagine how things could be much better, yeah, once this has been said and done. And if you're really anxious, because again, as I say, as I said earlier on, often there is this anxiety of if I raise this is going to create a rupture in the relationship that cannot be repaired. Yeah. So if you're very anxious about this conversation, it might really help also to kind of prepare yourself for it by grounding yourself, by, you know, breathing, by kind of getting some of the stress and anxiety out of your system, by kind of breathing out the tension, doing some breathing techniques, anything that is helpful for you to kind of get into a slightly calmer state before you have the conversation.
Yeah, and imagine also what it would be like if you were saying this to them, but also what it would be like for them to say this to you. How would you like them to say this to you in the right way? Mm. In Gestalt therapy, there's a technique, empty chair technique, where you imagine the person in another chair opposite you, and you say what you want to say to them, then you go and sit in the other chair and imagine you're them and notice how you respond to that and then what you say back, until you find a way of communicating through almost taking on these different roles where things feel the right way. And it's, that can be a great way as well to kind of run through the communication before you have it.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's really effective.
Yeah.
Right, have we missed anything, Tom?
No, I don't think so. I think we're kind of done for this episode.
Okay, yeah.
So again, thank you so much for listening to this episode. And please do go to our website, therelationshipmaze.com, where we have lots more resources that you can download or listen to. And also remember to subscribe to our podcast, share this podcast with anybody that you think might benefit from it, because we really want to reach people, because we're sharing information that we've spent years and years learning ourselves. And it would be so great if we can kind of share this and really help people with what we're talking about.
That's absolutely true. It's all tried and tested, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Over many
yeah.
years. So yeah, so lovely to be with you again this week, and we look forward to you listening to our next podcast next week.
Bye.
Bye.